The Free For All Roundtable.
Round two.
On the panel today, let's say good morning to Kareem Assad is here, Toronto lawyer and citizen journalist. Toronto City Councillor Brad Bradford is here. And Tamara Cherry with Pickup Communications, also the author of The Trauma Beat, which is an examination of how traumatic events are covered in the news. All right, let's actually begin with, you guys are not even in the middle yet of a three-day seating of City Council. And the drinking business comes to the table today. Is that going to be contested by anybody, or drinking in parks?
I think there will be a couple folks that are consistent in their opinion that they're not about it. But what we've seen from the data and the inbox would suggest that drinking in parks is fine. You know, I've kind of been there for years, actually drinking in parks, and now we're getting there. I'd like to see it kind of across the city rather than designated parks. I don't think the will of council is going to be there yet, but shouldn't be a major issue. The bigger one on the docket today is, of course, addressing
vacant home tax.
Yeah. I was actually surprised.
That's turned into a bit of a cluster.
It's a fiasco. And, you know, it wasn't good last year. The mayor has been there for almost a year now. I would have thought this would have been top of the agenda to sort out. Council very quickly in the fall decided to raise the vacant home tax, but they didn't do the hard work of actually fixing the program. I'm going to be looking for some accountability from the mayor on this. She's been very careful in her words about how somebody is no longer working at the City of Toronto. But, you know, I'd point out that the person who designed the program retired in February. So those are careful words.
And somebody else got cashiered.
Yeah, I think there's been a fall guy here. At the end of the day, administrative inquiry showed that the mayor has not had a single meeting with the civil service on this file. And when you look at the 170,000 people who got sternly worded letters from the city saying you owe us another $5,000, $7,000, $10,000 after a record-breaking tax increase, they don't have more money to ship to the city. And the problem with the program is it is the presumption of guilt. The city is saying, you don't live in your house unless you tell us otherwise. There are models like the City of Vancouver where it's attached to a hydro bill and you have that sort of data. This thing needs to be overhauled top to bottom, and as it exists today, I can't support it.
Kareem Assad, at the very least, the mayor was somewhat contrite yesterday in declaring this has been a fiasco and it needs to be fixed and apologizing.
Well, acknowledging a problem is the first step, I think, in resolving it. So there we go. I don't think it's a problem that can't be undone, but it obviously needs to be looked at. And there are a lot of unhappy people who just found themselves on the wrong end of penalties and fines.
Okay, listen, I want to leap to a few other things, but I will, of course, start with Tamara Cherry on this next one. I think this is going to be an incendiary conflict for a while, and it's the business of the speaker at Queen's Park banning keffiyehs. Keffiyehs are the traditional black and white checkered scarves that are worn often by Palestinians, but in other cultures as well. And Tamara Cherry, the premier, Doug Ford, actually sent a letter to the speaker saying, no, let people wear keffiyehs. And I'm kind of surprised that he's spending any kind of political capital on the issue.
This is anything but a black and white issue, obviously.
Ooh,
John.
Nice.
I mean, yeah, thank you. That said, I mean, I would like to be able to say, if you weren't wearing a keffiyeh before October 6th, then you shouldn't be wearing a keffiyeh today. But then you're going to have people who are saying, well, if you weren't wearing a yarmulke before October 6th, you shouldn't be wearing a yarmulke today. Though there is differences, and there's differences in how they have been used since October 6th. I think that this is, you're right, it's not going to go away. And especially now that Doug Ford has stepped into it. I mean, I'm interested to see how this unravels in the coming days, because I'm going to leave it there. Leave it to the wiser pundits to weigh in.
Well, Karima, you cover a lot of pro-Palestinian rallies and you see a lot of keffiyehs there. I mean, do you think that it's a totem or a marker of somebody who's inherently anti-Israel?
No, I don't think that that's fair to say. But at the same time, there are people who will appropriate or hijack or, in their mind, demonstrate allyship and support by wearing a keffiyeh, whose intentions there's a whole spectrum, right? And now I think that it's interesting all the major parties are aligned in wanting this decision to be reversed. So the speaker's really seems to be on his own on this. And, you know, I understand that within Queen's Park, there's this rule about not using props, not being political within the legislature. And I don't think that the ban on keffiyehs, I don't know that that is an appropriate way. When you instate a ban, you're going to have opposition to it. And I think it makes the issue all the more, as you put it, incendiary.
Okay. And Bradford, you know, there's people will claim it's just a lovely Middle Eastern scarf that I'm wearing. It's like, why? Okay. But you wore it into the House today to make a point.
Yeah. It's interesting that all the party leaders are united on this. I am always going to call out hate whenever I see hate. And, you know, we do that together. But wearing a kefiva in itself is not a hateful act. And it does have a lot of significance to folks from that culture. But at the same time, folks who have recently adopted this post October 7th, and when you wear it into a government body or a legislature, it is associated with making a statement, and people understand that. So, I think the premier's right on this, and the political parties are sharing that view. But at the same time, these are quickly becoming flashpoints, and there is division that comes with that. And we all have to watch it, because you don't want this associated with Islamophobia. You don't want it associated with hate. But when people are doing that and using this particular symbol to drive more conflict and division, that's not helpful for anyone.
People always get into, not everybody, and not always, I should say, but a lot of people get their knickers in a knot and declare a full court rally when it comes to something like halal mortgages. Halal mortgages are mortgages for Muslims who want to respect the rules which say in their faith that you can't have an interest rate. Karima Saad, I'll start with you. What people are arguing here is that we come up with a framework so you can get a halal mortgage from a legitimate bank instead of from some shady lender. And frankly, you know, what's the price? Somebody was complaining on Twitter yesterday, oh, so hardworking Canadians are going to have to pay for this. No, a Muslim who wants to buy a house is going to go to the bank and get a loan. And it's just going to be structured in such a way that it doesn't seem like a conventional loan.
Right. I don't think that there's any real monetary savings here. It's just about
they often cost
the structuring.
More.
There you go. So it's in fact a net negative, perhaps. I think the language of halal mortgage has really gotten people in a tizzy, and that's unfortunate. And I think that people are now sticking on to that, and at least in what I've seen in the online backlash, tying this to some sort of evidence that Canada is imposing Sharia law. That's not the case. But I think the wording there, while it's obviously targeted to the demographic, so that there's a mutual understanding of what this is, the average Joe online seems to have taken it the wrong way.
Well, and Tamara, I heard you in the background there. You, I have a feeling, were working fully as a journalist back when Dalton McGuinty wanted to shift a few things around, and there was such a panic over the idea, you're bringing Sharia law to Canada. And actually, the whole idea was, we actually have religious courts where rabbis and imams make judgments, and the idea was to try and legitimize that. It wasn't that, you know, some imam was going to order you to do things more Muslim.
Yeah, I mean, this backlash online is absurd, and I really hope that people writing these things do not actually represent the average Joe. But if people would just Google something before posting something, there would be so much less ignorance online. You know, what is the problem with having religiously acceptable banking practices according to Islamic law? There is nothing. And any time that institutions can operate in the shadow of mainstream, there's a higher likelihood of exploitation. So bring on more mortgages to keep people safe from banking predators, I guess.
Yeah. Although, last thoughts, Brad Bradford, I do find it, there are a lot of things in religion that strike me as sort of like not having a 13th floor in a building. There is a 13th floor. It's just called 14. And that's kind of what a halal mortgage is.
Yeah, I think that it's a creative way of getting to the same outcome that folks are more comfortable with as it relates to their religion. But for me, at the end of the day, this is about providing access to housing and making sure that people can get mortgages. And we want people to get mortgages. It's over the past number of years become increasingly difficult to get a mortgage with all the restrictions that are piled on already. That is keeping people out of home ownership. If this is a change that we can provide some accommodation, and as Tamara was saying, you institutionalize it with the big banks so you're not going to B and C lenders that are potentially going to extort you, that's a good thing. Let's get more people in houses. This helps.
Caitlin Clark's WNBA salary will be 160 times smaller than basically her counterpart in men's basketball. Tamara Cherry, I'll start with you. I mean, there are a lot of arguments as to why you would make less, but 160 times less?
It is ridiculous. But that said, I do think that Caitlin Clark will probably be the woman to change a lot of this stuff. I mean, Caitlin Clark has me paying attention to basketball, and I am so not a sports person. Let's not forget that she's obviously making a lot, and she'll continue to make a lot from sponsorships, but that's not the point. This is obviously ridiculous. It is nothing new to anybody that pays attention to NBA and WNBA. But I do think that times they are a changing, and if the NBA doesn't keep up with this and sending money down to the WNBA, then they're just going to be bigger losers for it.
Brad Bradford, I think in many ways I agree with Tamara that Caitlin could end up being sort of like what Tiger Woods was to golf. Golf was very profitable, but it exploded when Tiger Woods got in. Gretzky got people watching hockey who had never watched hockey. So maybe this is the chemistry that changes the formula for compensation.
Yeah, she is a phenom. She is a superstar, and it's not about, you know, being male or female. She is a global superstar as an athlete. And we all saw that in NCAA and March Madness and everyone tuning in. The reality is, though, these are leagues and market-based decisions. And if you look at, you know, the percentage of money coming into the different leagues as a share of salaries, it's very comparable. And I think this... the numbers are not great, but this is a league that is on the upward trajectory. We're talking about it coming to Toronto. They took a pass on it the first time, but now it's becoming more established. She's going to make a ton of money through endorsements and sponsorship, which I think is great. I want her to make a ton of money. And I think she is going to be the individual that all boats are going to rise together, because as people are tuning in to watch Caitlin Clark, that is going to drive viewership. That's going to drive ad revenue, ticket sales. All that stuff gets passed through as the contracts are negotiated. So I think we're at the beginning of a positive shift. It's not going to happen overnight, but it's probably going to happen over a season or two. And I think it's a step in the right direction, and good on her.
Thanks to you all. We're up against the news. Tamara Cherry, Brad Bradford, and Kareem Assad.
Catch the round table. Round one at 7:45. Round two at 8:45. Weekday mornings on More in the Morning. News Talk 1010, Toronto.